Well, we'll move on into the next station of it. Did I miss somebody? Does somebody else have a joke? I suppose I should ask that before. I can remember a number of times, you know, the term think outside the box. And I can remember sort of cringing when I would hear it used, because I would think, oh, they don't really mean that. You know, it's just what they mean is get this damn work done. You know, it's just a euphemism for you got to get it done. Figure out what.
That was the joke part. The joke was think outside the box.
Yeah. And so the term thinking outside the box is just not one that I like to use. And I've since over the years come to terms with it, because it itself is a euphemism for be creative, you know. And it just sort of is a little descriptive of the creative process, you know. Don't be constrained by the normal. A lot of times people say it, and all they mean is just reorder things, you know. It's a good term. I don't know that Holmes ever used it. I just want to talk a little bit to get our minds thinking of some of the things that I just felt were so good in the reading assignment for Holmes this morning, and just because he just touches on things right to the core. He starts out very early and says, successful people think about success. They don't dream about success. They don't wish they were successful. They think success. And I really like that. I had a friend at work who's no longer a part of our office, that hardworking person. I mean, hardworking person. Always sad, always upset, always... but working, reliable, dependable person, but always upset about something, always having problems with, you know, I'm so depressed, and I talked to this person, you know, on a number of times, and tried, of course, to implant some metaphysical thoughts in her mind. And I gave her a copy of Dyer's book, Intentions. She gave it back to me. She says, I can't think like that. I can't think like that. So although she was a hardworking person, she couldn't handle anything that was negative, yet she dwelled in that negative world. And she eventually left, going just thinking that something better would be somewhere else. Now, you've heard me talk and say what a wonderful work environment I work in. I mean, you can work any hours you want, you know. Creativity truly is encouraged because it's absolutely essential. They're just all sorts of... Well, welcome anyway. And then I thought of a character in the books that was just the opposite from this character. Now, anybody read Terry Pratchett? Do you?
Oh, yes.
I love Terry Pratchett. Oh. In fact, when we do our book reviews, I may do a sort of a net cast about with quotes from several of his books. It's all wonderful. It's a metaphysical world. And it's funny. And if you don't want to see your metaphysics made fun of, don't read Terry Pratchett. Because there's nothing sacred about it. But successful people think about success. And there's a character in here called Carrot. Carrot was, and I don't want to spend too much time on it. I've been warned I could talk for 2 hours about Carrot. But he was 6'4", but his family was in the mountains, and he had survived a bandit raid and he was alive, and his parents and all his family were gone. He was rescued by dwarves who aren't real fond of humans, but they raise him in the mountains. And so, unfortunately, when he's become 6'4" and everybody around him is 3 foot, he's clearly a little different. And but you never in any of the books ever see Carrot down. He always has a positive, and he has concerns, but he just has a positive attitude about everything. Everything is going to be okay. If you do the right thing will happen. Mm-hmm. Mrs. Carrot's attitude. And people, you know, some people think of him as simple. Well, it is simple. But here's a person who's been observing Carrot in action for some time, and her name is Angua, but she's thinking about Carrot after he's said something. I mean, in horrible situations where everybody think, oh, you know, everybody around is thinking, you know, this is, we're all going to die. He's not thinking that. What he's thinking happens because he knows that's what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. But he's just said something, which I don't want to get into. It requires too much background, but she's thinking about him. He could lead armies, Angua thought. He really could. Some people have inspired whole countries to great deeds because of the power of their vision. And so could he. Not because he dreams about marching hordes or world domination or an empire or a thousand years. Just because he thinks that everyone's really decent underneath and get along fine if only they just made the effort. And he believes that so strongly, it burns like a flame which is bigger than he is. I love that. He's got a dream, and we're all part of it. And the weird thing is that no one wants to disappoint him. It would be like kicking the biggest puppy in the universe. It's a kind of magic. Carrot only thinks about success, but not domination, not, you know, not victory, not winning. He just only thinks about success. And the next thing that Holmes mentions that I just... He says, we may sympathize with people, but never with trouble, limitation, or misery. If people still insist upon hugging their troubles to themselves, all the charity in the world will not help them. And that's this person that I was thinking about. You know, you, as long as you embrace your misery, you will embrace misery. So it's a box. You know, this happens on the job all the time. As long as you are blaming someone else, whether it's your boss or a coworker or whoever it is, you are trapped in a box. And it's a box that only you can step out of. In the very next page, he tells the secret. And okay, it's a little like Carrot's secret here. I and my Father are one. This is strength for the weak and life for all who believe. I am one with the infinite mind. It sounds too simple to be true, doesn't it? But it is the path out of the box. It's the route. The person who is to succeed will never let his mind dwell on past mistakes. He will forgive the past in his life and in the lives of other people. If he makes a mistake, he will forgive it at once. This is how you let go of the embrace of misery, of the embrace of failure. These cheerful, hopeful attitudes of mind are indispensable to the one who really wants to do things in life. So it's, you know, my daughter, whom a couple of you saw performing when she was here, has had many years of a problem with OC and depression. And she took medication for it for several years, and then she decided that the medication just made her feel too low all the time. Not sick, but just too low all the time. And she wanted to learn to live without it. And she's embraced new thought practices to as her route out of this. And I have to say, it works better than the medication did. It works better when she sees herself going into one of her little fit things. And she sees it, she calls and says, "I need a treatment." And so we treat.
Can you speak just a little louder?
Pardon?
Can you speak up just a little louder?
You know, I'm sorry. I tend, when I start to feel emotional, to get a little soft. And that's why I'm... So thank you. I do need to speak up. And did you hear everything that I said? You want me to repeat anything?
No.
Because that was key. I'm just sharing that with you because it's somebody and you know... besides me that I, you know, in my family that I can see that is embracing something that's working for. I won't take up all our time with this, but this stuff is so good. In as we were talking before, in a lot of homes with little books like this, you'll get to sometimes the whole page will be it'll be a meditation that just needs to be done. And you know, in one of his pages here, he says, you know, see only what you wish to experience and look at nothing else. And then he, you know, in the very next page, he gives you a little meditation that's an open door to do that. And we're going to do it in just a few minutes. We're going to do it together. And then we're going to have a look at some of our metaphors that were in the homework in this first section. Then he goes on and tells you after you've done, and you know, after you've seen this meditation, he talks a little bit about the law of attraction. You can't talk about any path in science of mind or new thought without acknowledging attraction. And so the bottom line in the whole thing is, by thinking only those things that are positive, you're attracting that which is positive. You're thinking about love. You don't think about love lost. You think about love gained. And that's what happens. You attract it. You want to have love in your life, you give love. And my oldest daughter called me last night, and she was in tears. I might get soft again. I might start talking soft again. She was in tears, but not sad tears, tears of joy. And I could tell, you know, that she was crying when she said, "Oh, nothing's wrong, nothing's wrong." She says, "My baby tells me she loves me, and she doesn't know the word yet."
Yeah.
And she says, "Did I do that?" And I said, "Oh yeah, you did that." You did that. that baby is just giving mommy back what mommy's given her and what daddy's given her. And there's no words involved with it. But it's in the eyes and the feel and the touch. It comes back to you. So you want love in your life, you love. And that's what this little meditation is about. So I thought maybe right in the middle of this thing, we just do a little loving. And we'll do this loving together. And then we'll launch into the next step, and we'll laugh some more, and we'll hear some metaphors, and we'll do a little, and we might take a break. Okay, so if you'll just close your eyes with me. Together we make our unity with all people, with all life. We affirm that God is in us, that God in us is unified with God in all. This one is now drawing into our life all love and fellowship. I am one with all people, with all things, with all life. As I listen in the silence, the voice of all humanity speaks to me and answers the love that I hold out. This great love that I now feel for the world is the love of God, and it is felt by all and returned from all. Nothing comes in between, because there is nothing but love to come in between. I understand all people, and that understanding is reflected back to me from all people. I help, therefore I am helped. I uplift, therefore I am uplifted. Nothing can mar this perfect picture of myself in my relationships with the world. It's the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. I am now surrounded by all love, all friendship, all companionship, all health, all happiness, all success. I am one with life. I wait in the silence while Spirit bears this message to the whole world. And so it is.
So it is.
For me, that was a powerful experience. What time are we at now? We're not quite. This would be a good time to go ahead and take a little break then before we come back at a quarter of, or should we wait till 12?
Probably let's wait till 12.
Pardon?
It would be good to wait till 12.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll do that. So what I'd like to do now, if you did that, the assignment on page 46, I think.
Before you go on, could I say
Pardon?
Something about the meditation? Could I say something about the meditation?
You bet. You may, please.
It just reminds me of a story about this comes in. I know I've told you before, but some of you probably haven't heard it. Years and years after he was very famous on the West Coast, he went to Florida on a speaking engagement and a tour. And he had never been to Florida before, and he didn't know anyone in Florida. And he was a little nervous about going because he was used to speaking to audiences where people knew him. And the tour was incredibly successful. He sold out, you know, every room was full in every place he was scheduled to speak. And somebody who had arranged part of the tour said to him, toward the end of the tour, "This is just amazing. You are so loved everywhere you go." And he said, "I didn't treat for them to love me. I treated for me to love them."
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And that's so clearly illustrated in that meditation that he chose. And I try to remember that all the time, is that if I don't feel like there's enough love in my life, I treat for me to love more fully.
Yes.
Because it puts the power where the power really is the expression of God in us, as love in the world. So thanks for answering.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for that little story.
Yeah.
Okay. Myth number one, creativity comes from creative types. When I give talks to managers, I often start by asking, "Where in your organization do you most want creativity?" Typically, they'll say R&D, marketing, and advertising. When I ask, "Where do you not want creativity?" someone will inevitably answer, "Accounting." That always gets a laugh because of the negative connotations of creative accounting. But there's this common perception among managers that some people are creative and most aren't. That's just not true. As a leader, you don't want to ghettoize creativity. You want everyone in your organization producing novel and useful ideas, including your financial people. Over the past couple of decades, there have been innovations in financial accounting that are extremely profound and entirely ethical, such as activity-based costing. The fact is, almost all of the research in this field shows that anyone with normal intelligence is capable of doing some degree of creative work. Creativity depends on a number of things: experience, including knowledge and technical skills, talent, an ability to think in new ways, and the capacity to push through uncreative dry spells. Intrinsic motivation. People who are turned on by their work often work creatively, is especially critical. Over the past 5 years, organizations have paid more attention to creativity and innovation than at any other time in my career. But I believe most people aren't anywhere near to realizing their creative potential, in part because they're laboring in environments that impede intrinsic motivation. The anecdotal evidence suggests many companies still have a long way to go to remove the barriers to creativity. Myth number two, money is a creativity motivator. The experimental research that has been done on creativity suggests that money isn't everything. In a diary study, we asked people, "To what extent were you motivated by rewards today?" Quite often they'd say that the question isn't relevant, that they don't think about pay on a day-to-day basis. And the handful of people who were spending a lot of time wondering about their bonuses were doing very little creative thinking. Bonuses and pay-for-performance plans can even be problematic when people believe that every move they make is going to affect their compensation. In those situations, people tend to get risk-averse. Of course, people need to feel that they're being compensated fairly, but our research shows that people put far more value on a work environment where creativity is supported, valued, and recognized. People want the opportunity to deeply engage in their work and make real progress. So it's critical for leaders to match people to projects, not only on the basis of their experience, but also in terms of where their interests lie. People are most creative when they care about their work and they're stretching their skills. If the challenge is far beyond their skill level, they tend to get frustrated. If it's far below their skill level, they tend to get bored. Leaders need to strike the right balance. Myth number three, time pressure fuels creativity. In our diary study, people often thought they were most creative when they were working under severe deadline pressures. But the 12,000 aggregate days that we studied showed just the opposite. People were the least creative when they were fighting the clock. In fact, we found a kind of time pressure hangover. When people were working under great pressure, their creativity went down not only on that day, but the next 2 days as well. Time pressure stifles creativity because people can't deeply engage with the problem. Creativity requires an incubation period. People need time to soak in a problem and let the ideas bubble up. In fact, it's not so much the deadline that's the problem, it's the distraction that robs people of the time to make that creative breakthrough. People can certainly be creative when they're under the gun, but only when they're able to focus on the work. They must be protected from distractions, and they must know that the work is important and that everyone is committed to it. In too many organizations, people don't understand the reason for the urgency, other than the fact that somebody somewhere needs it done today. Myth number 4, fear forces breakthroughs. There's this widespread notion that fear and sadness somehow spur creativity. There's even some psychological literature suggesting that the incidence of depression is higher in creative writers and artists, the depressed geniuses who are incredibly original in their thinking. But we don't see it in the population that we studied. We coded all the 12,000 journal entries for the degree of fear, anxiety, sadness, anger, joy, and love that people were experiencing on a given day, and we found that creativity is positively associated with joy and love and negatively associated with anger, fear, and anxiety. The entries show that people were happiest when they come up with a creative idea, but they're more likely to have a breakthrough if they were happy the day before. There's a kind of virtuous cycle. When people are excited about their work, there's a better chance that they'll make a cognitive association that incubates overnight and shows up as creative idea the next day. One day's happiness often predicts the next day's creativity. Myth number 5, competition beats collaboration. There's a widespread belief, particularly in the finance and high-tech industries, that internal competition fosters innovation. In our surveys, we found that creativity takes a hit when people in a work group compete instead of collaborate. The most creative teams are those that have the confidence to share and debate ideas. But when people compete for recognition, they stop sharing information. And that's destructive because nobody in an organization has all the information required to put all the pieces of the puzzle together. And myth number 6, a streamlined organization is a creative organization.
Okay, you don't have to read that whole thing because that really is business.